All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Mark Chandler. Mark is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Sticking to our theme of what the economic fallout from this war could be, and more what we're learning from this war, we're also going to tie in currencies, as Mark is kind of our go-to currency guy. So, Mark, starting off, big picture, rather than just talking about the economic repercussions and where data could be going, I'm curious, in more of a broad-term sense, what do you think we're learning from this war in the Middle East and sending missiles into Iran?
Yeah, what are we learning? I hope we can learn something, and more than just about warfare itself, which I think is the nature of it's changing with the technology, emphasis on shooting down, that is defensive, interceptors, as opposed to just offense. It's sort of like in American football, rules have changed over the years, favor the forward pass, and then rules change again to help the defenders, and it's like back and forth. And I'd say that now it's more balanced in warfare between offense and defense. But I think that broadly what we're learning is that, sort of driving home this message that I thought we had learned during COVID, but apparently not. And that is that the U.S. lifestyle and its defense are based on supply chains the U.S. no longer controls. And I think that's whether it's with the rare earths, which are going to be needed to rebuild our arsenal. And I know President Trump has said that the U.S. doesn't really depend on the Straits of Hormuz. And while that's partly true, I think it also has shown in the war that how exposed the U.S. even if it doesn't really depend on the Straits of Hormuz. I think about the price of gasoline in the U.S. up over 33% since the war began. So we might have be the world's biggest producer of oil and natural gas, but at the same time, we're still part of a global market. And the same goes for the price of money. It seems to me that almost everything during the last part of this war, we have seen almost everything go correlation to one. That is, there's like one big trade. You either put risk on because you think the war is going to end soon, or you take risk off because it doesn't look like there's an off-ramp.
Well, Mark, to your point, it's not just the oil price itself. It's also a lot of the other chemicals. You know, we've seen chemical companies racing higher. It's fertilizers, it's helium. There's a lot of knock-on effects of things that go through that passage, the Strait of Hormuz, on ships that are now blocked. What we're going to see is, one way or another, higher energy prices, higher food prices leading to higher inflation. What does that do to Fed policy? What does that mean for expectations of rate cuts that are now starting to gradually shift towards rate hikes? What does that do for Fed policy?
Interesting, isn't it, Chad? A week ago, the market, the Fed fund futures, were pricing in about 6 basis points of a hike this year, almost 25%. And now it's pricing in about 6 basis points of a cut. What's interesting to me is that here we are well into the war, and the market has shifted dramatically about expectations of central banks. But as we talk here today, the Federal Reserve is the only major central bank that the market is pricing in even a small chance of a rate cut for this year. And remember, in the March dot plot we got from the Federal Reserve, the median was also for one rate cut this year. Other central banks seem more reluctant. And what I would say is that, in my mind, the most likely central bank to hike rates this month is the Bank of Japan. But I'd expect other central banks to hold. And I think that's the important point, is that the central banks want to look through the price shock, that's the supply element of the price shock coming from, as you mentioned, not only oil, energy, food, and some industrial goods. So I think what the market is saying basically is, even though the Fed meets later this month, it's likely to be on hold at least through the first half of the year.
This is around the world, though, because I think markets have been so wild and economic data has been, in a way, relatively consistent, but kind of trendless. We're not seeing major growth. We're not seeing huge contractions, I don't think, in economic data. It's just been kind of muted and boring. So doesn't this all just force the central banks to sit on the sidelines, because it almost does feel like they're waiting for something to spike or crash so that they then react?
Well, you would think so. But, you know, as we sit here now, the market's pricing in just about a 50% chance that the ECB hikes at the end of this month. And it's got a little bit more chance of a Bank of England hike than the Fed hike, or excuse me, than a change in Fed policy at the end of this year. So what I mean is that the market's pricing in a little bit more than a 25% chance that Bank of England hikes rates at the end of the month. We have roughly the same chance as the Fed cutting rates by the end of the year. So I think that what's happened is that the market's still pricing in for this year two rate hikes by the Bank of England, and from the ECB, the market is pricing in almost three rate hikes. I still think this is excessive, I think I agree with you that we should expect most of the central banks to try to look through this. There's a lot of unknown. If the war were to end in the 2 to 3 weeks that President Trump has suggested, would there be such a need to have three rate hikes by the ECB? And so I think that they're just hesitant to make an early payment. And I think that this is sort of what we learn in a game of chess. When in doubt, push a pawn, which means don't take dramatic action. And I think that's true to how officials do things as well. Don't decide anything until the last minute. And that allows you to collect as much information. So your information set, while always incomplete, is a little bit more full the longer you can wait.
Mark, I think it's a good point. There is the tendency for policymakers and central banks to wait for more data, but the bond markets at the long end of the curve aren't waiting, and neither are the currency markets. So let's bring into the equation here what's happening in interest rates and what's happening in currencies globally.
Sure. So I think that this is the sort of fascinating thing, right? Is that market has really pretty much stabilized. The market I thought had like got very excessive pricing and inflation. The markets anticipate, like we do with corporate earnings. It builds up some expectations, and I think that many people in the market recognize we live in a probabilistic world. It's more like what are the chances something happens? So I think that what's happened in this past week kind of is ironic to me in many ways. On one hand, the price of oil, the May WTI futures contract, is up about 11% this week. I closed at about 99.65 last week. We're trading now at about, let's say, a little bit over $111 a barrel. So oil price is slightly higher, but interest rates have actually fallen this week. And not just at the short end, as we talked about, but think about the 10-year. We closed last week at about 4.43, and we're trading about 4.30 now in the US 10-year. The 2-year yield is off by about 11 basis points, down to about 3.80. And so what's happened to the dollar while we've had oil prices rally, yields come off, is that the dollar is really mixed. I'd say broadly speaking, spent most of the week consolidating, but it's generally narrowly mixed. On one hand, the Australian dollar is the strongest of the G10 currencies, up about 0.3%. On the other hand, the British pound is the weakest of the G10 currencies, off about 0.7%. And it's roughly divided at the top, the G10 currencies are roughly 50-50 gainers and losers. And I'd say what's interesting is that we began the week near 160 dollar yen. And this is, of course, where people thought that the Bank of Japan would intervene. They didn't intervene materially. And most of the people who I talked to, Japanese officials I've talked with, they seem more sophisticated in drawing this like line in the sand at a fixed level. But they did increase, sort of escalate their verbal complaints and warnings. And the dollar yen is really finishing the week up slightly, that is, the yen's up a little bit on the week, about 0.2, and that's despite the general risk off as we head into the weekend.
So, Mark, when it just comes to the US dollar, then is this all the rebound we're going to get? It peaked its head just above 100 on the dollar index. It was a nice run for about a month and a half, but is that it?
It's a good question because I think that we held sort of the 99 area, which is sort of marked the low in the second half of March. It looks to me like we should expect something that's not so smooth. And what I notice happening is the dollar might, people seem optimistic in the first half of the week, and then as we head into the weekend, and especially this weekend, the long holiday weekend, people seem to be less optimistic. And I don't think it's just President Trump's speech. I think it's just a general pattern we've seen in the market where risk comes off in the second half of the week, partly because who knows what's going to happen over the weekend. So right now, I think that the dollar index in a trading range, probably that 99 on the downside. And the high we saw this week was really a new high for the year. about 165. So I think that's sort of more or less the range. Call it a 99 to maybe a par 50.
Well, Mark, in light of the dollar staying more elevated and interest rates putting in pressure on assets like gold, what is your outlook on the precious metals in this kind of an environment?
Gold is kind of disappointing if you think about higher inflation expectations, the concerns about the implications of the war and everything. I think that part of the issue, from what we can see from like central banks, is that there have been some central bank gold sales. Turkey's what caused a big splash. There's been reports that Russia has been also selling gold. Obviously, you know, the Ukrainians have been hitting their oil and gas capabilities, and this has hurt them. They obviously need more money. And so the selling of gold seems to make sense. And you know, at the same time, we've seen a big drawdown in the Federal Reserve's custody holdings for foreign central banks. It's bonds and agencies. And so my sense is that up until now, what we've seen, besides retail trend followers getting squeezed out of gold, I think that we've seen some central bank official selling of both gold and treasuries. For the same reason, and that is to create some liquidity for their own domestic purposes. So I thought that gold looked constructive, but we stalled yesterday, Wednesday, and today at the 20-day moving average, about 4780. I think that's what's stopping us, I think, from getting through, say, another test on 5,000. So right now, my best guess is we have to wait till after the weekend and see what happens with the war. But I thought that was positive was that in recent days, as the stock market, as sort of hope lifted the stock market, it also lifted gold.
It just seems like in the last few days, if not weeks, everything seems to be almost trading in tandem with each other. When fears come into the market because of the war, oil prices move up, everything else moves down. And then mid this week, we saw the inverse happen. But Mark, that whole story about Turkey selling its gold, the rumors that maybe other central banks are selling gold, and as you tied in, US Treasuries, have we seen this in history? And is this simply just short term because the war is going on, or could there be something longer term to this?
I suspect that it's a short-term phenomenon, but I think what often happens in the market is that we market participants confuse what is a short-term or a cyclical move into some kind of structural, more permanent macro development. And I know that a lot of people are skeptical about the US policy. You know, many people have op-ed pieces in the Financial Times in the last several weeks questioning if the dollar's role in the world economy is as secure as it has been. But I'm not sure this is it. I mean, I think that the sale of treasuries and agencies from the Fed's custody holdings seems to me not to be done for ideological purposes, but done for practical reasons. It's not like what else can you buy right now? Any place else? So if you sell your treasury, you say you don't like U.S. foreign policy, which I get, but then what do you do with that money? Almost any other country you bring that money to, you'll be getting a lower yield, lower transparency. That is, you know, it's a lower yield, lower transparency in the sense that the markets are smaller. And so less liquidity, and maybe even on the margins, less security. And by that, I mean the U.S. still, no matter what happens in Iran, the U.S. is still the global superpower when it comes to military. I think that last numbers I saw showed the U.S. Department of Defense spending more money than the next three countries combined. And so at the end of the day, I think while it might be coming, I think that what we're seeing right now is more of practical need the cash. What assets can I sell as a central bank and treasuries, agencies, gold?
Yeah, it's a good point, Mark. There's not really a lot of great options if you want to move your money out of dollar-denominated assets and put it elsewhere to get the same kind of return. But it does beg the question, which we haven't talked to you about this in a while, does this fuel more nations to be interested in something like the BRICS, where they are trying to find ways to start trading in their own currencies? Does this maybe lend credence to the idea of the de-dollarization movement? What do you think about those kind of discussions going on?
I think that there's merit to that. I think that countries want to trade in their own currency more. I think when they have choices, they try to do that. It's partly, I think, we began the year talking about de-risking. We thought it meant de-risking, reducing exposure to China. But now, here we are beginning of the second quarter, and de-risking has taken on another dimension, and it's to reduce exposure to the U.S. where you can. That said, still is pretty difficult in the sense that even say countries like the Eurozone, probably about 40% of their trade is still conducted in US dollars. Partly because whether it's oil, soybeans, semiconductor chips, it's funny, and I think that the dollar is sort of to the world what English is. Not that everybody speaks it, everybody wants it, but it's the language of business. And in most countries, the elite, political, financial, business elite speak English. And I think that that's the same thing for dollar, that the dollar still is the money of choice in the world. But it's being eroded a little bit. But I think that the true function of the dollar's role in the world economy is not so much whether it's used for transactions to buy and sell goods. After all, here's how I think about it. World trade in goods and services in a year is, say, $120, $140 trillion. We see that turnover in the foreign exchange market in 3 weeks. So to me, what really drives the foreign exchange market is capital flows, what moves capital around. And it's not so much trade. Again, the capital markets are bigger than trade. And so I look at trade, especially for smaller countries, emerging market countries, less diversified. But when I try to think about the dollar, I don't really pay that much attention on a short to medium term basis of the US trade deficit.
So, Mark, taking a step back and understanding that there are just so many unknowns with this war, we've seen traders, I think, move more to the sidelines. Central banks, as we talked about, still mostly on the sidelines, although some might hike here in the next week or two. But that really brings up the question that, yes, okay, markets were slightly down prior to this war. This war has really pushed the indexes lower. This is, in a way, self-inflicted, and Trump does keep on talking about ending this war without really telling us what the overall game plan is. Is this just, no matter what market or index you're looking at that's been pushed down by this war, is this simply just a great buy the dip opportunity, almost like Liberation Day turned out to be? Just this one is a bit longer lasting?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we've seen some almost like natural experiments. Like earlier this week, when President Trump had suggested that the war m might last only 2 or 3 more weeks, markets seemed to like they want to believe it, and hope. We saw the way that that hope rippled through the capital markets. Like you mentioned, everything became correlated, right? So as when people had that hope, the stock market ends up jumping, right? And as the stock market jumped, as what happened? Oil set back, bonds rallied along with stocks, gold rallied, the dollar came off. And so I think we know what would happen if tomorrow, maybe in celebration of Good Friday, that President Trump announced the war was over. What would happen? I think we'd see the same thing, but people become more convinced. It'd be more on steroids. We'd see bigger rallies in the stock market, a bigger setback in the dollar than we saw. I think that's a general direction. I think it's just where are we going to get that trigger from? And President Trump's address to the nation on Wednesday seemed to have weakened that confidence, especially, I'd say, in Asia and Europe. Perhaps less so in the United States, where we saw little follow through. Dollar selling or even stock market selling, even though oil prices remained high on Thursday.
All right, that takes us through this weekend show. Mark, thank you so much for your time. Again, Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website, which I'll post a link to in the show notes. And for everyone listening, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please go back through our website, kereport.com, or on your podcast player or on YouTube, just search The KE Report. That's where you can get all our daily editorials, company updates, and this full weekend show. We talked a whole lot about precious metals and had a lot of company updates throughout the week, so be sure to check all those out. And as always, keep in touch with Shad and I through email. Mark, thanks again for taking time with us on this weekend show. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. Hope you all have a great Easter long weekend.
The Cortland Economics Report is produced for A.B. Cortland and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Cortland, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Cortland Economics Report.